It's everybody's favorite philosophical fight night. Is faith or reason more important? We discuss this on this episode of The Overthinkers. Hello, thinking people's thinking people. Welcome to The Overthinkers, a home for people who love to have fun thinking deeply. Like yourselves, I presume. I'm your host, Joseph Holmes, filmmaker, film critic, professional, lovable, intellectual, and with me as always is my fanatically reasonable co-host.
Nathan Clarkson, actor, author, filmmaker, and angrily a center to reason. Meaning I have to explain
unpack
this
that for now. Us, yes.
Okay, so let me unpack. I do believe in reason and reality, and sometimes I'm angry at it, but I feel that I am forced to still live under its oppression of me, reason and reality. I would much rather be a fantasaical person with my head in the sky, but I just can't be. So a begrudgingly reasonable person. There we go.
There we go. Oh, that's good. That's good. Very good. But I like the passion behind, like, you know, angrily, you know, it's the most reluctant convert territory. You're fighting against reality. But yes, wrestling with God, so to speak. Anyway.
Exactly.
This is very cool. We're already underway. Today, we're going to be discussing whether faith or reason is better. And this, very excited. If you know us, this be very excited for us to talk about this. But first, Nathan, if people enjoy our conversation and want to engage with more of our content and meet fellow overthinkers like themselves, where can they go?
They can go to theoverthinkersjournal.world, where they can find out more about their hosts and send us all of their love and hate mail. They can also go to the online Facebook group, The Overthinkers, where we have almost 20,000 people just like yourselves getting into great discussions about all the stuff we talk about here and tons of memes. If you do enjoy the podcast, please consider leaving us a review. It really does help us so very much. Oh, yeah, and share with a friend. You think I'd have this down after 200 episodes.
you start to just, you know, it rolls off the tongue. And, you know, but of course, if people love it, they should share with a friend. You know, All right, cool. Ready to get started?
Let's do it.
Awesome. So, faith and reason have been at each other's throats since the Enlightenment, when intellectuals pushed abandoning building worldviews around religious faith in favor of building world society around pure reason. Prior to the Enlightenment, theology was part of the scholastic sciences alongside the other sciences. But with the Enlightenment, many philosophers drew a stark contrast between faith and reason. Bertrand Russell, a child of the Enlightenment, summed up in Human Society and Ethics and Politics, "We may define faith as the firm belief in something for which there is no evidence. Where there is evidence, no one speaks of faith. We do not speak of faith that 2 and 2 are 4 or that the earth is round. We only speak of faith when we wish to substitute emotion for evidence. The substitution of emotion for evidence is apt to lead to strife, since different groups substitute different emotions." U.S. millennials grew up with new atheists like Richard Dawkins continuing that critique of faith, saying, "Faith is the great cop-out, the great excuse to evade the need to think and evaluate evidence. Faith is belief in spite of, even because of, the lack of evidence." Religious people have pushed back on this framing of the issue and arguing that it misrepresents both faith and reason. Christian intellectuals like C.S. Lewis, William Lane Craig, and Timothy Keller have argued that religious beliefs are undergirded by evidence, whether it's logic or historical evidence, and secular beliefs such as the scientific method, human rights, and even faith and reason itself are all beliefs that require some kind of faith. As C.S. Lewis said, "Suppose there was no intelligence beyond the universe. In that case, nobody designed my brain for the purpose of thinking. Thought is merely a byproduct of some atoms within my skull. But if so, how can I trust my own thinking to be true?" So, Nathan, if there are two things that listeners know about us, is that we love Jesus and that we love thinking, dare I say overthinking, quite a lot. But how do you define, first of all, faith and reason? But then if you had to choose, which do you believe is more important and how do they fit together for you?
Yeah, this is going to be super fun because this is throwing me back to a time in my early young man phase, when this is really kind of the entrance, these questions and these subjects were really the entrance into my furthering of my theological study. It kind of all began with apologetics. And apologetics ultimately is kind of the arguments and reason behind faith-based positions. And so this is really, really fun to kind of explore this, particularly because I do think, you know, we think about the new atheists and all of them kind of kind of yesterday, you know, that was a thing. But I think the outcropping of what they believed and argued for is taking place right now. We're seeing the results of all the things that maybe in the 2010s they argued for and found in their books like The God Delusion or God Is Not Great, et cetera, et cetera. And so while we don't see as many, you know, atheist versus believer debates, I do think that these questions are still incredibly relevant in the minds and lives of people today, because those are the debates that informed the people that are running society today. Those were the ideas and questions that were implanted in the kids who are now adults who are getting jobs working and running institutions of today. So I do think that talking about whether faith or reason is more important is actually very apt to this current society, even though it's not quite as popular a question that's formulated in that way. So when it comes down to faith and reason, right? I think just the entirety of this question kind of bothers me because it establishes faith and reason as inherently opposed. It's basically, do you want black or white? Do you want numbers or letters? Do you want up or down? And so even the framing of the question sees these things as inherently opposite or opposed to each other. And that is something that I think is a first needs to be addressed. Is let's actually look at the question and have a problem with the question. I don't actually believe that faith and reason are separate things. I don't believe that these things aren't compatible. And I would actually say that in many senses that faith and reason are overlap hugely. Meaning, you know, I think that a true and good faith is going to be a faith based on a true and good reason. Now, the criticisms of faith is that it's kind of interestingly enough, they're all kind of subjective, right? There's a million gods, there's been a million faiths. So obviously faith isn't gonna be wrong, but I would push back on that and say, well, there's a lot of reason that has been had from person to person, from group to group over history. And so when you're looking at the critiques of one, very often the same critiques can be levied against the other. But that's getting ahead of ourselves. I'll try not to get ahead of myself in this because I have the curse of knowledge on this because all I did for like 5 years was read apologetic books.
We are such nerds on the level of apologetics. We don't, you know, again, half of our episodes would be just on this. Like if we had our druthers, both of us like got our start in the kind of our faith, well, not our start, but a big part of faith-based journey is in this apologetics world. So yeah, we're definitely going to be, this is going to be a fun one, but yes.
I will say the beginning of my adult faith-based journey was my entrance into apologetics. So, you know, my faith had been a part of my family, my upbringing, and all of that. But when I decided to really investigate for myself and make that decision for myself, this is where it all began. And again, the question was posed, are you going to be a person who goes with reason or faith? And I said, yes, I wanted to do both. Because, you know, the part of how my mind works is, I can't take something just on trust me, bro. That doesn't work for me. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the modern Christian movement is a big movement of trust me, bro. It's a lot of God told me, or this is going to happen, or I just feel the whatever. That wasn't appealing to me. But in the same way, I went over to kind of the quote reason side. Now, as I was looking at that side, believe it or not, there's a lot of trust me, bro. And they just say, but the trust me, bro, just trust the science, bro. And so what I found is that, again, the same critique in my mind could be levied against both of these. So I kind of began this journey of, well, what is faith and what is reason? And are they at odds, or are they complementary and actually very often overlap in huge ways? So I will leave it at that, where one, I'm going to just kind of begin this conversation by saying, I think the question is framed in a way that is disingenuous to the reality of faith and reason. I do not believe them to be opposites. I do not believe them to be at odds with each other. And I do believe them to be complementary and beneficial and even necessary for both to work well. So I'll just start with that before I get into too much. But Joseph, I want to kind of hear your thoughts. One, kind of why this is interesting to you, why it matters now that we talk about this, and, you know, are faith and reason opposed? And if they're not, why does everyone tend to think so?
Those are a lot of really great questions. And I do love that, you know, for a certain number of these episode titles, we come up with the titles and then we spend a lot of time talking about how the questions are the wrong way to frame it. But we're asking a question for the title that everybody else is answering, but I do find that super amusing.
Well, I guess that's the definition of the word irony.
Yeah, I think you brought up a very interesting point. Again, as I talked about in the intro, and you brought up, most of the time when people in our society talk about faith and reason, they talk about things that are in tension with each other, if not enemies. That's how, certainly, again, as millennials, we grew up, we talk about the new atheists a lot, and that's because that's our, in our generation, we were growing up as teenagers. That is, those are people who are setting the tone of the argument. We're saying, hey, you have to choose between the faith that you were taught as children and being a thinking person who uses logic and reason to come to the truth. That's how we were kind of, you know, it was framed for us. And you and people in the younger generations may be having a different conversation, but that's the conversation that we were having. And it is informing a lot of the conversations they're having now. So I think that that's a big part of it. And it goes back to the Enlightenment, where a lot of that started. But yeah, I grew up as a child. I grew up as a child like everybody else.
Not scientifically possible!
But I had two ordained minister parents.
Joseph.
Loved.
You still are a child. Sorry, just had to sneak that in there. Continue.
I would be disappointed with you if you hadn't. Both my parents were ordained ministers, and they, you know, talked about theology and God all the time. And they introduced me to C.S. Lewis and the Narnia books. They did such a great job of building for me a love of God and of Jesus, and seeing how beautiful the world was to me if this was true. And so when I was a teenager and I started to become an obnoxious intellectual as well as a Christian, I want these things to not just be beautiful, but to be true. And I had a lot of people in the culture saying, but actually it's not. And see how smart I am and how, you know, and how I can use logic to pick apart these things. So now, but as I also engage with not only them, but engage with other Christian religious thinkers, I saw the counter argument, which is that this idea of putting faith and reason opposed to each other doesn't entirely hold water. So the definition of faith, if you look at Oxford Languages, is, you know, complete trust or confidence in someone or something, or a strong belief in God or the doctrines of religion based on spiritual apprehension rather than proof. So those are two different definitions they have there. The definition of reason is a cause, explanation, or justification for an action or event. Two, the power of the mind to think, understand, and form judgments by a process of logic, or verb think, understand, and form judgments by a process of logic. And, you know, aside from the sort of editorializing of that they do with, like, based on spiritual apprehension without rather than proof, aside from that editorializing, what you see is actually things that are not at all in conflict. You know, if to have trust in something is not in conflict with a process of, you know, conceiving of something and understanding something through logic, or have something you have evidence or justification for. Believing something and having justification for something, or processing or understanding something through reason and logic, those things are not in conflict. First of all, because many people have said, in order to, you know, the process of logic is, I am going to, this is, logic is actually very simple. It's, if this is so, and this is so, then this is so. You know, again, the old classic one is, you know, Socrates, all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. If these two things are true, then this third thing is true. So just intuitively, you can see that believing something and trusting something and having evidence for something and using logic for it are not at all in conflict. So that began a kind of a journey for me to understand how the argument that faith and reason are not at all compatible was nonsense, just at least at a conceptual level. Now, you can go then and say, well, does this particular faith, you know, have no reason attached to it? or not, you know. And that was a whole other thing in apologetics, looking at Christianity being like, oh, this does seem like it actually has good reasons for it. But I will say that, you know, for me personally, I'll just kind of throw this back to you. So like that was part of my journey. But to me, when you look at like, is faith or reason more important? You know, it's like, well, no, you have to have trust in something, and you have to have reasons for it. But for me, the most difficult aspect of it was not putting truth and or faith and reason, or was truth versus beauty. Because what I was afraid of is the beliefs that I had that I thought were beautiful, that made me happy, but that were going to be set against the things that I thought might be true. And so I think oftentimes people talk about reason being opposed to faith, but oftentimes reason is what we're really afraid of, is reason is going to be opposed to happiness or beauty. So that was really what I was more afraid of as I was investigating this. So anyway, that's how I kind of started at it. But now I'm going to throw it kind of back to you. How did you kind of start to wrestle with these things? And what level of importance did you place on them, and kind of why? Because I know you said, like, I love my faith, but I also wanted it to be true. And so that's something that I think is an interesting thing to explore.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And you know, it's interesting that you read the definitions. We're big on definitions here, kind of defining what we're actually talking about. And I think that's something that's kind of missing in this whole reason versus faith debate. And when you read the Oxford Dictionary's definition of faith, I find that, you know, not to disagree with the dictionary here, but I find it a very poor understanding and definition of faith. And in a second, I'll read one that I think is better, that comes from the Bible, right? The Bible trumps the dictionary, everybody. All right.
Bible versus Oxford, round one.
But so what I found is when I would go and read some of these books and listen to some of these speakers, because, you know, I was worried. I wanted to make sure that my faith was reasonable, was true. Like you said, I wanted this beautiful thing that I've been introduced to also be true. And because at the end of the day, I'm going to go towards what I believe to be reality, not just what I want to be, but what I believe to be is. And that's the scary thing, right? But that was a journey I was willing to take. And so I investigated. I investigated these minds who were saying you should get rid of faith and only go with reason. And I found a few interesting things when they would talk about faith, when they would kind of slam and dunk on faith, and, you know, and make these accusations or whatever it might have been. The funny thing to me is, one, I didn't become an atheist quick, not because I wouldn't be willing to if I thought it'd be more true, but the faith they were dunking on wasn't one that I had experienced. Yeah. They were dunking on a form of faith that was easy to dunk on. And so what I started to realize is, I think these guys are choosing a particular kind of definition and even expression of faith that's the easiest to dunk on, and it's the easiest one to make look like it's at odds with reason. But the faith that I had been introduced to, and the one that I had practiced, was one that wasn't just based on emotion, wasn't just based on old stories. It was a rigorous belief that had rigorous research and data to support it. It was one that looked at psychology and history and I'm forgetting all the other things it has, etymology, whatever it might be.
Science.
Yes, thank you. It had all the things around it that supported what it was. And so I want to read the definition of faith that we actually find in scripture, which again trumps the Oxford Dictionary. Sorry, dictionary, you're at odds with the Bible now. But this is what
At the very least, you have to be knowing what definition of faith are Christians working from that is the reason that they embrace it.
Yeah, and we've talked about how often it's so much easier to destroy a straw man caricature of something rather than what it actually is. And so the reason my faith wasn't destroyed when I read these books by these atheists, by the new atheists, or watch their lectures, was because they weren't actually attacking my faith. They were attacking a form of faith that doesn't actually, well, it might exist, but it doesn't exist, at least to me, in the way that I practice and understand my faith. So Hebrews 11, 1 through 6 has this to say as the definition of faith. And I would say this is the one I ascribe to. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. And right here in this definition, you immediately see something that they claim is a part of reason, which is evidence. Right there in Scripture, God is telling his people through Scripture that evidence has to be a part of your faith, that we don't just get to believe things because we feel them or just we want to or we have a desire to. We believe them because there's evidence. Now, my faith was based on evidence. It's based on a multitude of evidence, both my own personal evidence of experiential things that I can measure and see, and also other people's, and also findings and data and support and all this kind of thing, and things that just make sense logically to me. But immediately what I discovered is, yeah, they were attacking this definition of faith that not even Scripture has for a definition of faith. And so I was going, wait, so are faith and reason, again, back to this question, are faith and reason at odds? I don't think they actually are. And I'll tell you why. Because I have a reason for my faith. And I'm going to put this in a separate context outside of religion. So my wife, before I started recording, she made me this drink that you can't see if you're not watching, but I'm holding a drink. She, of her own volition, made me a drink very kindly. Now, I have faith that she didn't poison this drink. She could have. She absolutely could have poisoned this drink. You know, occasionally I get on her nerves. I could have really gotten on her nerves this morning and she decided to poison me. But I have evidence that that's not true. Now, it's still an act of faith for me to drink this, that she hasn't poisoned this and that she never will. But it is an act of faith, but I do trust the evidence that I've seen of how she treats me, how she is, the consistency in her behavior, our own relationship. In that I have evidence that this drink is not poison. I'm about to drink it live on air, so we'll see what happens. This whole argument could fall apart.
This would be a really great episode. Yeah, right? if you were to die on film.
Oh, Kelia, did you poison this? She's smiling. She's not answering. This is not good, everybody.
Well, no, she's had opportunities. But that's the thing. You have evidence. She's had opportunities to poison you before, and she hasn't done it.
She has. Exactly. I don't actually know. There's no way for me to know there's not poison in this drink unless I drink it. That's the only possible way I can know. So technically, it isn't.
But then it's too late.
Yeah, by then. Exactly. But it's an act of faith that I'm drinking this. But my faith that she is not poisoned is based on strong evidence that I've seen over in a multitude of ways over a long period of time. So here we go, everybody. Let's see if my faith was well placed. I took a sip. I'm still around. So I live to fight another day. I know this is kind of a silly example, but I do think it illustrates that faith and reason aren't at odds with each other, but they actually work together. Reason helps us understand our faith better. And so this is something I want to encourage people, is particularly the believers out there. No, faith and reason are not at odds together, but we do have to foster a faith that's based on reason. And that's entirely possible. If we go back to the beginning of the Enlightenment, kind of when all this stuff happened, one of the impetuses for the Enlightenment to begin and all these philosophers to kind of saying, we got to get religion, is because religion had become this thing that was very, very,
dogmatic, violence, whatever.
Dogmatic, but also when you think everything's, spooky and bad, why can they not?
Superstitious.
Superstitious. It becomes superstitious. Become dogmatic. It become based on kind of random things that didn't have a lot of purpose behind them. And so the early Enlightenment thinkers were ones that are attacking a particular kind of religion that probably deserved to be attacked. So this is me saying now, not all faith is worthy of accepting and having. Just because you are a person of faith doesn't mean it's a good faith. The way we can actually find a good faith is by utilizing reason to tell us what faith we ought to enact and embody. And so I'll stop there and let you jump in, Joseph. But all that to say is that's a little more of a practical understanding of one. A lot of the arguments against faith are against a faith that's not the strongest example of faith. And two, if you're a person of faith, we actually have to utilize reason, as Scripture says, utilize evidence to base our faith upon that. Without it, it's just blind belief. But Joseph, what are your thoughts kind of on this?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things on that that I want to go down, I think, that are interesting. First, on to your point, yeah, one of the things I found is that a lot of the new atheists, when they would be writing about faith or talking about faith, they would describe a faith I didn't recognize. They would be describing, hey, the reason people believe, either, you know, I something like either Jesus didn't exist or the reason that people believe that, you know, Jesus resurrected is because it was a myth made up years ago. It's like, well, okay, no, we do have actual historical evidence for these things. There are actual people have reasons for believing these things historically. There are reasons for believing things about God logically. People are coming to these things with reason, with evidence. Even the Bible, like, and one of the reasons that people would actually like believe that it was God talking was he would do some miracle or do something like that. And they would actually look for evidence that somebody with supernatural abilities was actually talking to them. And people would, even today and throughout history, would have reasons, logical reasons for believing it, as, you know, well as other things. And that would be the same way that they would actually come to their conclusions, which I think is fascinating, because the other thing was that I would look at them and I would say, well, there are things that you are actually taking on faith as much as Christians are. Because Christians do admit that, like you said, you know, I have evidence for this belief, but I could be wrong about it. But I am going to take that leap of faith, so to speak. I'm going to make the decision to believe this anyway, even though I might be wrong. But the funny thing is, I would listen to like atheist scientists, you know, talk about it, and they do the same thing. They say, we have a bunch of evidence for this, and therefore then we're going to make a hypothesis. And we're going to believe in the hypothesis because it seems to work. And things like, there are also things like, hey, I believe in something like human rights. I believe that, you know, that I can trust the reality of my senses. I believe that I can, you know, believe that if I pursue the truth, that will ultimately be a good thing for the world and society. And there would be all these things that they would say, or like, you know, it's better to love people than to hate people. There'd be all these things that they would say. And first of all, they wouldn't seem like they would feel the need to justify them, oddly enough. They wouldn't seem like they would need to give reasons for them. They would just accept, obviously, this is true. This is self-evident. Even though it often wasn't self-evident in most times in human history, some of these things. I would find that mix of, I'm going to give reasons for what I believe, but I have to take a leap of faith. And also some of the reasons that I have are undergirded with a kind of faith that I'm just going to have to trust, seemed to be something that everybody was doing all the time. It wasn't a matter of the people who are religious on this side and people who have reason on that side. So that was something that I was finding fairly consistently. And that seemed like a very reasonable place to be. It's like, yeah, Alex de Tocqueville, as I've mentioned this before, he said something in the book Democracy in America that's always struck with me, which was that there literally is not enough time in a person's life to investigate everything for yourself, to prove that everything they believe is true. You know, you have to trust scientists. You have to trust, you know, navigators. You have to trust your parents. You have to trust, you know, you just do not have time to investigate everything. So there's a bunch of stuff you're going to have to believe the testimony of other people. And so as I investigate all this, I understood that everybody has a unity of trust and justification for that trust. And oftentimes the justification for that trust is simply, this person has been right enough times before, and when I try to do what they said, it's worked. And so I'm going to go with that. Now, I think this is really interesting, the fact that we are always tied between the things we want to be true and the things we don't want to be true. And Dr. Jonathan Haidt has done a lot of research on this. One of the things he pointed out is that for things that we want to be true, we need one bit of evidence for it. And things we don't want to be true, we need four pieces of evidence for it. And I think that, you know, one of the things that frustrates, and this is like, again, I have met a lot of religious people, and I've met a lot of non-religious people that show that double standard very, very evidently, where if it's something that they really like and that it's beautiful to them, that if this be true, then if you give them any reason to believe it, they will leap on that, and they will ignore as much evidence as possible to the contrary. And I think that at its best is what people who are very reason-oriented, people like atheists, are going after, is they see religious people, and I've met a lot of religious people like this, who don't really investigate the beliefs that they have, and they do hold to certain religious doctrines without investigating them, and even when those things do harm to other people. And I think this is sort of where one of the tricky things about, you know, kind of faith and reason or beauty and reason is that if I were to choose one, I want to say that I would choose kind of reason and truth. And the reason for that is that if you don't go with reason, if instead of reason and faith, we say truth and beauty, if you go with beauty over truth, eventually it's going to bite you. If you say, I want to believe that God is talking to me and telling me what to do and following this voice is what's going on. Or if I want to say, I want to follow this dream, I believe this is a call of my heart, a dream that I'm going to achieve this dream. Eventually reality is going to have the final word. And I think a lot of people who kind of reject faith, grew up in families who basically said, I want to believe this is true, and so I'm going to continue to believe this is true, even though truth is getting in the way of that. And you, child, you're going to pay the price for it. The fact that I, the mom or the dad, refuse to see the way that the thing that I'm believing is harming you as a child, I'm going to refuse to see the truth of that because that would make it me unhappy. And you're going to be the one that's going to face the consequences of it. You're the one who's going to be hurt by it. And I think that, so that is why I kind of, as much as I kind of want beauty over truth, because why wouldn't you? It's beautiful. I really do try to make it a ritual to focus on truth because truth always wins in the end. That said, you know, one of the amazing things about being a Christian that I found is that I found that truth and beauty are reconciled, you know, in it says the Bible says grace and truth kiss in Jesus Christ. It's like what is true is also beautiful, what is beautiful is also true. And I find it, firstly, if you don't dismiss things just because it doesn't meet your narrow definition of evidence, but you also make sure that things have a justification, you actually do find that what is beautiful also becomes true. And so it's worth pursuing. What is it that you find beautiful? Pursue that. Are you able to justify that with logic and reason? Pursue that. If you have that dialectic going on, then you actually do find that you're able to have a life that is both beautiful and so you love it, but also true so you don't fall off a cliff because of it. So that was a giant jump down the rabbit hole. But what do you think about that? How would you add to that and wrap that up?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And what I ultimately realized is, like the atheist and the person who says they're dedicated to strictly reason, I did abandon faith, but not a good faith. I abandoned a lot of faiths that I didn't believe were healthy or ultimately true. And so ultimately, it was my reason that led me to a better, more robust and stronger faith and more true faith. And so exactly what Joseph is saying is allow your reason not to lead you away from something. Because here's the thing, as you pointed out, Joseph, a lot of people want to, quote, claim reason because of emotional hurts, because of ulterior reasons, or because they don't want to be part of a group that looks stupid or bad, because of social pressure. But those are all non-reasonable things. None of those things have any bearing on truth. So even you going for reason can be an unreasonable thing. But to me, the most reasonable thing in the world is to allow your reason to influence and create your faith. And so ultimately, reason and faith are not at odds. They are actually complementary. And to have a beautiful and true, robust faith, you need reason, but reason has to lead you somewhere and will lead you to a beauty of faith. And so as Joseph said, these things can be married and can be fully realized in a particular form. And anyone who tells you you need one or the other is lying to you and probably has an ulterior motive, or they have emotional reasons as to why they need that to be true, even though it isn't. But faith and reason are not just complementary, but needed. for each other. And humans, as we can see throughout all of history, have been drawn to both what is true and have been drawn to what is beyond anything I can understand. What's the word I'm looking for?
Transcendent.
Transcendent. Towards the transcendent. And so with the understanding that this is a human need towards transcendence and towards truth, understand that both can help you arrive at the correct conclusions and understanding of both of those together. So ultimately, no, I don't think I have to choose between reason and faith. I choose my faith because that's where my reason led me. I hope that some of this rabbit hole today that we talked about can encourage you, or at least spark some thoughts in your mind. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up, you know, this again, kind of the one of the biggest pushbacks against this dogmatic belief that truth and reason are not compatible, would be the people throughout history who have shown that actually their faith and reason have actually pushed them further in their accomplishment than they ever could. You know, if you look at scientists throughout their history, many of the greatest scientists have been believers, and they credit their faith as something that has helped them discover something bigger and more beautiful about the world, and true and beautiful about the world. You know, beginning with, I mean, I'm not beginning with, but one of the most central figures we can look at is Sir Isaac Newton, you know, the father of physics and modern science. And he credits his faith as the central inspiring aspect to his conclusions about science. And then you have Georges Lemaître. I know I got that name wrong, but literally you have a Catholic priest which is so funny, who is literally the person who formulated the theory of the Big Bang that seems that the atheists love so much, but they forget that that was actually a theory that came out of a priest's faith and interest in the beauty of the universe. And then even more recently, you have people like Francis Collins, who was head of the Human Genome Project, who won the Peace Prize. Again, forgetting the Nobel Peace Prize, goodness gracious, and the Nobel Peace Prize. But all of these, and they're just endless, countless amounts more who you see have done this in a way where they've married the beauty of their faith with the reasonableness of truth to an incredible outcome. And I think it might encourage you to go back and look at some of those people and see, oh, truth and faith, truth and beauty and faith and reason are not against each other. They need each other. And when you combine them, the world becomes more beautiful and more understandable.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the funny thing, I mean, is that the people who were the spearheads of the scientific method, who invented, I mean, here's the thing, atheists have existed since the beginning of civilization. There were atheists in, you know, in ancient India before there was Christianity ever existed. The people who invented modern science, who invented our modern schools of saying, oh, the universe is intelligible. The universe is something we can understand. The universe is something that we should understand and investigate. All came from people who were Christians within the Christian West, who based that explicitly, argued, based that belief on the fact that there was an intelligible God who made the world and wanted us to investigate it. And so the idea that historically that there has been a battle between them is a very recent thing that, like you said, came out of people, the Catholic versus Protestant wars, where people couldn't agree on the tenets of like Protestantism or Catholicism. And so we're at war with each other irreconcilably for hundreds of years. And so they're saying, okay, how can we base a world on where there's not going to be any war? There's not going to be all this stuff. Of course, that didn't work. We kept having wars about other things because there are other things we can't agree on. It's not a, you know, religious versus secular thing. There are things we can't agree on. But you're right. It's a myth that these things are not, that these things are at war rather than married and can't marry each other. But it does take work to do that. You actually have to want to marry them together. So, yeah, I hope that people have enjoyed this. And this is... been helpful for them. I hope that whether you're religious or not, you have a better framework now for thinking about the dance between faith and reason. But now we are on to our blesses and curses segment of the week, where we take a work of art, media, or resource and either recommend it, i.e. bless it, or diss it, i.e. curse it. So, Nathan, I know you have a lot of really cool blesses and curses today, so we get to dig into our well of apologetics. So give it to us.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with easy peasy. If you were starting out and it's like, man, I love my faith, but boy, I have been pushed back, whether at school or work or whatever, and I'm having a difficulty understanding the reason behind this, and it's causing me doubts, and is there a reason to faith? One of the first places I'd point you to go is the group Reasonable Faith, which was spearheaded and begun by a guy named Winland Craig. He is, you know, one of the preeminent philosophers of still living of this age. But he's also a Christian philosopher, and he has spent his life's work showing how reasonable faith is, hence the name of his organization.
I see what he did there.
On Guard. So On Guard is this book that has literally really begun the journey for many, many people into realizing, oh, my faith makes sense, and it can be married with reason. This is a great starting place. Winland Craig has, you know, endless amounts of doctorates. He's an academic, but he wrote this book in a way that even a person who's never waded into these conversational waters can 100% understand and begin to grapple with these big, big questions. And it will give you such a huge education, but in a way that you can understand it. So you're not digging through some weird textbook and it's like, I don't know any of this. This is a great place to start. Obviously, I'm going to bless real quickly C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity. He definitely did the same kind of thing, but earlier in age, kind of decades ago, back in the 50s or 60s. And then I'm going to bless a series of videos on YouTube. It's from the Thomistic Institute. Those are the videos. And what you'll find is a very knowledgeable and intellectual priest who go through and walk you through Thomas Aquinas, who is one of the fathers of the modern theological movement, who is all about faith and reason working together. And he can watch in these really cool videos with illustrations to walk you through this systematic theology to understanding the reason behind the faith. So if you want to engage with Thomas, with the high thoughts of Thomas Aquinas without having to read the Summa, then I encourage you to jump into these videos, because I don't want to read the Summa. I read Confessions last year by Augustine. Boy, was that a slog. I'm all about doing the videos to deepen yourself. There's no shame in that. Podcasts, videos, whatever you can, whatever works for you in your life, these are worthy subjects to jump in. Don't let anyone pressure you into thinking you can only do it one way. So definitely check out the Thomistic Institute.
Don't listen to him. Read the Summa Theological like a man.
Yeah, read it every year. that would be funny, because it would take me probably 18 years to read that thing. And I'm also blessed a debate that I really enjoyed in my early years. Or my mid years, perhaps, is one I can't remember when it came out, but it's by a famous atheist, Christopher Hitchens, who I do find rather charming and very often compelling, while at the same time a little disingenuous, shall we say. But you know, that British wit really goes a long way. But he's fun. I really enjoy watching him in debates. And he debated this guy named John Lennox. John Lennox is a mathematics professor at Oxford University. So he's no schlub. He's not anybody with just a few opinions. He's someone who comes as a scientist to the debate, but he's a believer. He believes in God. He's someone who believes in the divine. And watching these two great minds wrestle with this big question, this is one of the things that, one, it's just a fantastic debate. And they're both, you know, you got a British and an Irish guy. We're both infinitely charming, so I have fun. But
that famous conflict between the British and the Irish.
Yes. but it's just so great to watch great minds. But I promise you, if you were someone who's like, well, I want to believe that faith is reasonable, that you will leave listening to John Lennox's words, especially when put to the test against such a worthy opponent like Christopher Hitchens, it will kind of demonstrate to you that these ideas of faith can stand the test of reason. So definitely check that debate out, Christopher Hitchens and John Lennox. I am going to curse. I'm going to be fair here. I'm going to curse a Christian thing and an atheist thing. I'm going to curse the debate between Lawrence Krauss and William Lane Craig. This happened not too long ago. Well, it could have happened a while ago. I'm getting old. But this was the exact opposite of the debate I just talked about. This was not two people trying to find truth. This was one person trying to engage in a dialogue about truth and another person who spent the entirety of their time mocking sanctimoniously looking down upon and taking pot shots at their opponent, which is not reasonable, by the way. I left thinking, like, I don't think he has any reasonable reason to believe the things he does, because he spent the entire time just making fun of and taking pot shots at someone who believed differently than him. And so that's a way not to do a debate, whether you're atheist or a believer. Don't come to a debate with the intention to understand and find truth and defend your positions, but not to just throw pot shots that have nothing to do with the actual. So I got it. It was such an embarrassing display from Krauss, and it was just, I look at that and go, wow, that is not the way I want to interact with and argue about these ideas. And now I'm going to curse, hopefully no one will be mad at me, none of you Christians, but I'm going to curse a documentary I watched when I was pretty young called Expelled, and it's hosted by Brad Stein. This made its rounds within the church culture for a while. And he does exactly what I just criticized the atheist for, which is I'm going to make a caricature and a straw man out of the ideas of my opponent and then knock that down rather than actually engaging with the ideas and the propositions from the other side of that particular aisle. And so, you know, I remember people like, yeah, we showed the atheists. And that was before I'd really met any atheists, and I'm like, yeah, they did. He did show the atheists, and I met him. I was like, oh no, he didn't. He showed a fake version of atheists, of non-belief or skepticism. And so I got to curse that. It's just what it did for me is, for a second, it said, did you have to make a caricature of their ideas because you were scared if you showed the real ones, you couldn't actually withstand or contend with them? And so I think oftentimes where you think you dunked on somebody, what actually it does is actually it sows seeds of more doubt in people because they realize, I don't know that you could stand up to the real ideas being put out there. So I got to curse the Expelled documentary. I'm sorry, everybody. But those are my blessings and curses. I hope those are helpful.
Hit a lot of the high points. So I'm going to add in a couple. Obviously, you know, Tim Keller has written two books. You know, one is The Reason for God and the other is The Reason for Belief. Both, one of them is, again, it's sort of like an updated Mere Christianity, Reason for God, sort of for more modern people. And The Reason for Belief is stepping back and being like, well, why do people believe anything at all? You know, why do people even think that the religious instinct makes sense? And so he kind of goes back. And so if those things might be at your speed, if you want like a little handbook thing, like my first apologetics book was the Josh McDowell More Than a Carpenter book, yes! Which is like really, really short, but it like introduced me to just some of these ideas and ways to think about it. So yeah. if you just want like a little thing to get you started, More Than a Carpenter is great. Then I immediately jumped to the 700 page Evidence for Christianity book. So like, which I read in 15 minutes every day. You know, for like,
oh, I thought you read the whole book in 15 minutes and that was going to be
no. Yes. Yeah. That would be a lie. No, but that was where I learned real discipline. I will say also, yeah, recommend, you know, a couple of YouTube channels. You know, I mean, Premier Unbelievable is one that hosts a lot of debates within Christianity, people debating, but also like Christians and non-Christians. And it's a lot of just those debates and discussions that are happening within the faith and then outside the faith, I think is really good. People can engage it if they want to engage more. I'm also going to actually bless an atheist YouTube channel and a creator, Alex O'Connor. I actually really like him. He's sort of like the new generation of new atheists in the sense that he is very dichotomy, you know, reason over faith. But I really respect the fact that he really does actually, you know, bring on Christians and it welcomes them and debates them in a respectful manner. And he also brings on atheists and is back against them when they are saying things like, well, hold on, like you're saying this, but You know, is it, so he really, he's a lot more feels like dedicated actually to truth than many, even the of the new atheists were. And so I really like what he does as well. I'm also going to, you know, I did this just the other day, like very recently. So, but if you want to see actually idea of the sort of faith and reason necessity in action of why reason is sometimes not enough, you have to make a decision based on the evidence, is the movie Anatomy of a Fall. Is, again, it's a courtroom drama and a drama between a mother and a son, and it really wrestles with that in a secular framework, why they need each other. So I recommend that. I'm going to curse a movie that many people love, many religious people love, and I don't get it. I don't see why. I think it's not that great artistically, and I think it's not that great, not that great kind of like in its promotion of faith without reason. And it's funny because a lot of people who are not the Christians who don't understand what good art is like this movie. It's the sophisticated Christians who like this movie, but it is the life of Pi. And I'm not criticizing the book, which I haven't read, but I'm criticizing the movie. Okay, yes, I've heard it's really good. And so I don't criticize the book for it, but the movie, it's very flat artistically. Again, it does not get across a lot of nuance that and deep spirituality. And it does end, spoilers, with the fact saying, is like, both basically saying, choose faith because it's a more beautiful story. And say basically the end of it is both the facts can basically fit both, but this is a better story, so choose that. And I really think that that's the wrong way to go about it. Obviously, beauty is a component in it, but it basically says you really don't have a hope of coming to what the more true conclusion is, so just do the one that makes you feel better, which I think is incredibly toxic for a multitude of different reasons. And that's a version of faith that I know a lot of the smart people who are not people of faith, the reason that they reject it. So I curse it both artistically and just as an expression of faith. So there you go. But yeah, cool. Well, thank you again, everybody, so much for engaging with us with this. Please, you know, again, if you think we got something wrong about how we handled the question of faith and reason, let us know. We'd love to talk to you about it. You also can, if you want to, Nathan, if people want to get in touch with us or you and engage with more of our stuff, where can they go?
They can go to theoverthinkersjournal.world, and they can also go to our online Facebook group, The Overthinkers. We want you among our ranks. If you want to get in touch with me, you can go to nathanclarkson.me or search my name, Nathan Clarkson, on any of the socials.
Fantastic. And you can find me on any of the socials as well as josephholmstudios.com. I also write for Christianity Today, Religion Unplugged, Religion and Liberty, all of the cool things relevant. So you can check me out at those places. Thank you, everybody, again, so much for joining us. And remember, if it's worth thinking about, it's worth overthinking about. Thank you.